Ideas Podcast.
The Novel Ideas Podcast, a podcast with two siblings who love books.
Yeah.
No material prepared this week.
I'm sitting there desperately like, oh god, what's a joke I can make about the book? I have nothing. So.
I love books so much I shaped a child from birth to be some sort of Uber reader.
Well, you can do that.
To defeat the aliens.
Oh, well, you can't usually do that.
The alien books.
What?
I don't know. I don't have one ready either.
American books hate Chinese books. That kind of alien?
Yes.
No. Okay, well, let's move on, because this radio silence is not making for good podcasting.
It's all right. I'll cut it in post. Or will I?
I'm going to push this farther away from me so I don't throw it at you. So I just didn't see you for a week, but now I want you to leave again, man.
It's like every time I got back from school when I was in Texas, I'd come back and Gabs would miss me, and then 15 minutes after I walked through the door, she'd tell me to go back.
You're so annoying.
So, this week we are doing Ender's Game by Orson Scott Card.
Yep.
And we brought a special guest along. It's Ender Wiggin, straight out of the book. I have the technology
only
to do
11
that.
Years old.
I have the technology to do that.
You just defeated the buggers, Ender. How do you feel?
How does it feel?
Ho, Ben. Ho, Gams.
Ho, Ender.
You call me a hoe?
Hey, watch out.
This book is sexist.
This is the feminist fist to the face. No, our guest this week is Kevin Smith. We'll use his real name.
Director of
now you all know
Clerks.
How to find him. That's right. he is an expert on Ender's Game, I think, the same way I am.
Just by loving the book?
Yes.
I am definitely an expert in that sense. And having read it at least a half dozen times.
You know words and you can speak them. That's our prerequisite for expertise on the show.
Kevin's also listened to multiple episodes of the podcast and even left us comments on
That's true. We even attempted to use his feedback to make a small modification, though. I don't know how good we've been about it. Our actual plot summary that we do now.
Oh, yeah.
And the ratings.
And the ratings.
And the ratings. Oh, good. The ratings are healthy, and that's good to know.
Sometimes we have a good time with those.
There you go. So now we know we'll have no commenters on this episode, because our only commenter is on the episode.
I want to go on there and comment.
Rate how good the podcast is.
I love this guy. You should have him on all the time.
Oh, you should take it the opposite direction. You need better guests. Get people who know stuff.
This guy's so boring.
I can't believe I listened to 80 minutes of that bullshit. So, this week we are going to make sure to mention the spoiler policy.
Like we never do, ever.
Yeah, though, a lot of the books we've been reading lately, you don't need a spoiler. The spoiler warning, not so important. This book, however, and because there is a movie of recent vintage, shall we say.
Came out like a week
ago. Exactly, very recent vintage. It's not even done fermenting yet. There are some significant spoilers in this story, really one in particular.
Yes.
And so if you don't want to have that spoiled for you because you haven't read the book or because you haven't seen the movie and you're not intending to read the book, actually, if you're that person, just go right ahead and fuck up.
Why would you even listen to the podcast?
Exactly. Like, what are you doing?
I hate reading.
I don't want to read this amazing book. I want to go see the mediocre movie.
Weird to have a fan who didn't read like ever.
Just listens to every episode religiously.
Maybe some weird cult of personality going on.
Your podcast is so great. I wish I had read a book ever.
I wish I was literate. I can't even use iTunes. That's how I found you. So yes, anyway, we will spoil the shit out of that, probably in the next 30 seconds.
So turn it off now!
So yes, turn it off if you don't want spoilers. Or you will discover that Ender's Game is not, in fact,
a game.
Hmm.
his candidate training at the end of the book, where he's doing a series of simulations against his mentor, is actually fighting real buggers.
Not a simulation.
Ships. Yeah.
That's right.
So when he blows up the planet at the end to piss everybody off, he actually kills all of the buggers in one fell swoop.
Oops.
Oops, lol. Can I press the undo button yet?
Oh, kids do the darndest things.
Yeah, and he does that to piss everyone off, but then everyone's really happy about it, and he's the one who ends up being pissed off. Yeah. Like, most of Ender's plans at back failed.
It's like, it's actually, if you're going to write this book in 2013, then you would write it where the whole thing was a reality show, and it was just one elaborate hidden camera joke the whole time.
That's right. The Truman Show. The Weekend Show.
That's right. We trained him since he was 6 to be the ultimate military commander. Now, watch as we pull the curtain away and show him that he just committed genocide.
Wah, wah, wah.
Wah, wah. Poor Endor.
It's okay. As long as you watch it with the Benny Hill theme, it's funny.
Yeah, there you go. Some yakety sax. You shouldn't have mentioned that. There's a good chance it ends up on this episode now. I should just make that the music bed for the entire episode.
Oh, God.
Like, every episode.
For an entire hour. So, yeah. Inspiration for the book.
Well, aside from the fact that we really like the book and have for a number of years, it's topical because there's a movie out that you may have heard of called Ender's Game. I don't know. They play trailers, you know, every once in a great while. If you look really hard for it, you can find one.
Yeah.
Or if you turn on any television for more than 45 seconds, you will see a trailer.
Or if you watch Hulu, like, every single commercial break is Ender's Game trailers.
I don't know how you guys get this. My Hulu never has anything awesome like that. It's always some terrible commercial for a cell phone or something. I would die to watch Ender commercials every 30 seconds.
Well, my first year of using Hulu was me slamming the "this ad is not relevant to me" button, because I used to be the only commercials I got were for cat products for some reason.
Cat products?
It'd be like rainbows and sunshine and a happy little cat, and I'm like, I hate cats! No! For the 57th time, I don't want to see a fucking cat food commercial.
I did see a commercial the other night watching it that was all about peanut butter cost. It's an Aldi commercial.
Oh.
When my mom buys this peanut butter, she can afford to buy me a juice box. I was like, but the peanut butter only costs $1 more than the... I don't understand.
Juice boxes are $1. A commercial end.
You're female and over 24. You're getting into that should-be pregnant exactly. Demographic for advertising.
Hurry up and pop out some little Ender's Gabs.
No.
That's right. We need them to save the world.
I don't want kids who are smarter than me. fuck the world.
That's right.
I have my ego to think about.
That's right. Just prepare to say hello to your new alien masters.
The other reason you might have heard of this book is that a lot of people... It is definitely in the vogue now to hate Orson Scott Card.
That's true.
And especially with the movie coming out, I think a bunch of LGBT groups were publicly boycotting the film and talking about him being an ass.
Actors and producers are kind of distancing themselves from him a little bit. And I guess the easiest way to summarize the controversy would be that Orson Scott Card has written some fairly horrible things, by progressive standards, certainly, about gay people in the last few years, and a lot of people are upset about that.
Yep.
And so they don't want to support his movie.
Yep.
That I'm not sure he has anything to do with, other than the title, actually.
I don't know either. I don't know if he is making any money off the movie or not.
Presumably, well, actually, maybe not. If he never writing credit, he might have gotten paid for the rights. It might be too late, folks.
I don't know. I don't know. He is a dick, though. I will say that.
He certainly comes across as one. Some of the things I've been reading about him lead me to believe he might be more of an all-around crazy person than only a bigot. Which, honestly, to me...
Which makes him more lovable.
See, to me, it almost makes it more forgivable. It's like, oh, you say crazy things about everything. Well, you can't help it then.
Just like a tick or something. Gay people are bad!
Oh, I'm sorry. I can't help that. Obama's forming camps to send all the Republicans to... What? No, he's not.
Whoa, Orson Scott Card.
Simmer down, buddy. Maybe that's the answer to the question that you asked about the first invasion. If Orson Scott Card ever writes about the first invasion, it's going to be Obama.
Barack Bugger Obama. Yeah, that's right.
Seems to fit his mindset. I'm just saying. So anyway, we thought we probably had to mention that.
Yes. We are going to probably ignore him for the rest of the book, though.
Yeah. As he probably deserves.
Yeah.
Which is honestly probably the correct response if you're looking for it out there. There's like a whole, can you separate the art from the artist side of debate that goes along with this. So if you can't, then I suppose you're probably not listening anymore by this point anyway. So let's dive right in.
Another thing I'd kind of point out is that it's 25 years ago. Like, there's also a pretty serious chronological separation from when this book was written to his present insanity. So,
true enough.
If that helps you at all, that maybe an alternate self decades ago wrote this.
Well, even, you know, Fred Phelps. No. Was it Fred Phelps? One of those crazy guys used to be like a civil rights lawyer.
Oh, I know that.
Okay.
I don't remember which one now, but one of those crazy guys used to be a civil rights lawyer, so...
I was just going to say, for context, in 1986, I was 4 years old.
I was not yet born.
So, it's been a while.
This book is older than I am.
Well, isn't that adorable?
No.
No? Okay. What is the genre of this book?
Science fiction.
Young adult.
Military science fiction? Dystopian question mark?
Dystopian question mark?
Kind of pre-dystopian? Trying to prevent the dystopia?
I mean, the society, the way some of the stuff is run is kind of dystopian, but it's not like full-blown dystopia.
Yeah, I've seen it described that way. That's why I wanted to put it on the list. But I would actually argue that dystopian is maybe a little more of the setting, and maybe mm-hmm. not so much the genre, or that even then, like, you could kind of decide how you want to define dystopia, because I would say this particular authoritarian government kind of has some logical reasons for coming into existence that aren't so much trying to point out issues in modern day society, unless aliens are invading as I speak, and I just don't know about it.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think a dystopia would be more like they snatch Ender from his family and he doesn't want to go, and then kids at the battle school are like dying left and right, no one gives a shit. I feel like that's, like, at least modern day dystopia, it's like, all the bad things are happening, no one cares! But only one guy dies at battle school, and that was, I think it's someone court-martialed, so.
True.
I don't know.
Fair enough. Like I said, I've just seen it described that way, so I thought I should throw it out
there.
Maybe
the genre is just smart kids. Smart kid literature.
I like it.
Smart kid lit.
Smart lit. I'd read it. Also sounds kind of like an app.
Ugh.
Time for your smart lit app. Anywho.
It's actually a flashlight.
Is it really?
No, I don't know.
Okay. I was even worried.
You download it so excited. Oh.
Yeah.
Just a white lit screen.
Our totally unfair, poorly researched plot synopsis this week is the power of love will save us all. Unless you're a bugger. Also, if you're a bugger, it will save you.
I don't think that's unfair, poorly researched at all. I mean, that's an accurate description of the book themes.
It's a little glib, but otherwise pretty much there.
It's fairly accurate. I wanted the plot synopsis to be your gold-plated fart.
Yeah.
Because that's my favorite insult in the whole book.
Just take the create new taglines for Ender's Game based on all the lines involving the word fart. Ender's Game, like a fart in the air conditioner. New York Times.
Ender's Game, last one there saves their farts in a jar.
Washington Post.
Ender's Game, you're about as strong as a fart.
New Yorker.
Some farts are really strong. I don't know. That's not really an insult. Like, what kind of fart?
Ender's Game will make you tear up like a powerful fart. San Francisco Chronicles.
Christian Science Monitor.
Christian Science Monitor. Oh, that's a good one. Perfect.
Ibendu, would you like to give a summary of the book for anyone who has not read it?
Sure, I'll see what I can do. So, Ender is a brilliant young child who is taken off to battle school, where gifted children are taken to be shaped into commanders to fight against the alien buggers who have previously invaded our solar system twice. So, in battle school, Ender is... he's isolated and forced into uncomfortable situations to try to bring out his brilliance until, at last he is promoted early, after many hardships, and he is, in command school. He has to fight his way through simulated enemy fleets, one after the other, with, his closest friends from battle school serving as his subordinates, and after the final training mission, it turns out all those training missions were the real missions, and they were actually commanding the human fleets, and that we were the third invasion.
Whoa.
What? Yeah.
Yeah, and then it turns out even after that, that the buggers were never going to come back and invade us ever again because they found that we were sentient and they felt bad.
Yeah, the epilogue of this book is a little tragic.
We kind
of
killed them for no reason.
They were kind of just sitting there waiting for humans to arrive.
And... yeah, they were like, oh, we hope they forgive us for doing that. Oops.
Oopsie. In our defense, we didn't know better.
Yeah.
That's,
but we could have.
Yes, well, it's kind of the great tragedy of this particular war now, isn't it?
Yes.
So, the setting of the book is mostly in the battle school or the command school. Where
which is just
Ender
outside
is.
Of Earth's...
Yeah, one's in orbit and the other is a... Well, I guess it's actually a few months away, but... given interstellar distances.
Yeah.
It's probably not that far.
Yeah, I guess I was imagining it being closer Earth than it probably is. So probably can have, like, a giant battle school just, like, right there without fucking stuff up.
No, the battle school's in orbit around Earth, but it's Eros.
Oh.
The asteroid is... Yeah, the command school.
Quite a ways
away. The command school.
Yeah.
Okay, I was not hearing you correctly.
I was speaking fast and fat.
I was going to call you fat, but I really think it was called for in that situation.
It's okay. I just thought I'd give you a little assist there.
Guys, I'm not smart enough to talk about Ender's Game.
Also, it is in the future. Probably the relatively near future. It sounds like it's supposed to be close enough to now that we can recognize the world.
Yeah.
It's 100, 200 years.
Yeah.
Pretty near future.
Definitely not distant, crazy future.
Yeah.
Where people are like, what's Earth?
That's, yeah.
That's a myth.
Right. Oh, that old trope. Oh, Foundation.
Or Battlestar.
Or Battlestar Galactica.
I've been watching that.
Yeah, Battlestar.
It's definitely not Battlestar. This book is not Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah, this book and Battlestar Galactica share very little DNA.
And the point of view tense is mostly third person close around Ender. Occasionally third person close around his sister Valentine. And then the beginnings of every chapter are like page long dialogues between two adults. Not always named, but yeah. I assume one of them is always Graf.
Yeah, that's what I assumed anyway.
At the beginning, you have no idea who it is. So it's kind of this foreboding voice talking about the future of Ender and what they're going to do to him. And as the character appears in the actual story, they kind of at least refer to who's talking.
And... yeah, one of them will call the other one by name, and you're like, oh, I met that guy, okay.
I know him.
Like, come on, Anderson, this is necessary for the war.
or Graf will say, like, you know, like, well, I was with him on the shuttle flight, and I made sure he was isolated. And they're like, okay, well, I know that is.
I thought we said no names.
They're recording us. Who's they? No one knows.
They're recording us right now.
Oh, I see what you did there.
No, there's a microphone up in the air, but actually.
Oh, right by my head.
It's Obama.
That's right.
He's looking for an Ender Wiggin.
He's looking to send us to one of those FEMA camps since we're reading subversive Orson Scott
characters. Oh, Jesus. So, anyway, who's the protagonist?
Ender Wiggin.
No, I don't believe you.
Andrew Ender Wiggin.
That's right.
Ender, after reading this book, I always thought the name Andrew was stupid. Why wouldn't you just go by Ender? That's way cooler.
There's a much-hyped basketball recruit at KU named Andrew Wiggins, and I don't know how his nickname I don't know how his nickname has not become Ender yet.
Even I caught on to that not too long ago with my complete unawareness of basketball. Like, Andrew Wiggin!
Maybe no one at KU reads.
Well, let's not rule it out.
You'd think there'd be like one sports journalist somewhere who was like, wait a minute.
No, too highbrow. Yeah. We'll lose our readership.
He's from Canada. The best I've heard so far is Maple Jordan, which is kind of funny, but I want him to be...
Is that racist?
What, Maple Jordan?
Oh, you think I'm from Canada that I made a maple syrup or whatever?
Oh, hey, you think for a time from Canada I'm made of syrup or something, you hoser?
I bet he does not talk anything like that either.
I bet he totally does.
Let's call him.
Yo, Ender, pick up the phone.
Be like one of those wacky radio shows. Hey, can our intern get the phone number for this guy?
Maybe if he can make some game-winning shots, they'll start calling him Ender.
Yeah. If he wins a lot of games at the very end. That's
right. Last-minute chuck down the court.
He's a closer.
Especially if he was a third child. That would be the best.
All right. So our story opens.
So KU basketball player Andrew Wiggins is the protagonist of this book.
Yes, and in the first scene, he is preparing to get his monitor removed while he looks down his nose at the rest of the class because his sister taught him basketball when he was 3. Oh, arithmetic, sorry. Yeah.
We should also mention that Ender starts the book at the age of 6, which occasionally when I was reading it, I would just be like, oh, you know, kids interacting, and then someone would say, they're 6, and I'd go, oh, shit. You know, it's easy to just be like, oh, that's the way kids interact, but then when I actually think about 6-year-olds that I know, then I'm kind of blown away a little bit that these kids are 6.
Right.
Yeah, all these interactions seem to be about 6 years older than the kids actually are. Kind of a vague middle school era dynamic. I think just a testament to how much more advanced they are than the average kid their age.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I can definitely see it in that light, because I agree that they seem older than they are for, or at least the younger students at the battle school seem to be older than their chronological age.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it doesn't seem completely outrageous to me, because I've been around a lot of gifted kids. And been a gifted kid.
I know some smart 6-year-olds, but...
I mean, I know that them being able to form some of those sentences aren't crazy, but the idea that they're not just, like, running around and pretending to be dinosaurs the other half of the time is kind of hard to believe.
That's right. Zero-G Velociraptor.
Yeah. Let's see, right now I'm plotting the course, learning how to plot a course for a starship in class, and also... run.
And also penis! There should be more of that.
That's true.
You're a penis, and everyone laughs hysterically.
When someone calls someone a fart, everyone in the room should stop to giggle for a minute.
If the book or if the movie does not do that, they're doing it wrong.
I think in the movie they're teenagers.
Farts are hilarious, guys. I don't know, if I heard someone call someone a gold-plated fart, I would probably giggle. I'm in my 20s.
Farts are funny, penises are funny. A penis farting is hilarious.
Oh, God. That just gave me a weird fucking visual.
So glad to be of service.
I don't believe Ender's penis ever farts in the book.
Well, not canonically, but in the bitchin' fanfic that I wrote.
In the Bean Ender fanfiction that you wrote?
Yep.
Oh, God. Okay, no one should be shipping anyone in this book, by the way. That's the other thing about them being six, is fucking six.
No one outside of a federal prison should be shipping any characters in this book. That's
right. Unless you're shipping, like, Graf Anderson,
well,
I guess.
Okay.
They're at least adults. I don't know why you would do that, but...
I thought Graf and Mazer totally had some chemistry gabs.
Ew. Graf is like, I just think of like an old gross dude when I think of Graf.
Getting grosser every chapter.
Exactly.
Eventually doesn't fit in his chair anymore.
Ender, let me show you
to battle school.
Oh, never mind, it's too far.
Even in zero G.
And Mazer's like, cool, strong old guy.
Yeah. He's the sensei. He's the Obi-Wan.
He's the Yoda.
The Yoda. Minus the death. Well, that's spoiler true. Alert!
Yoda dies. Also, Darth Vader is Luke's father.
I mean, I have to bleep that out, Gab.
Sorry. Well, shall we talk some about Ender?
Oh, sure. Is that what this episode's about?
Aside from him being precocious. What else?
Sure, let's talk about the little penis farter.
Oh, jeez.
Possible episode title?
I don't know, dude. So Ender is a third. He's a turd. As he's affectionately referred to by other characters in the
perhaps
book.
Not so affectionately. 30-30.
And this is enough in the future. Overpopulation's become a problem and everyone has adopted China-like policies where you can only have two kids until you start getting punished for it. Like, fines and stuff, I think.
I'm not sure what they do.
Taxes and extra taxes and stuff
it
like that.
Sounds like in a generation or two before, it was mostly taxes, and that now it's something a little more, a little harsher.
Yeah, because Ender's parents had to get special permission from the government.
Yeah.
Well, it's definitely culturally unacceptable to be a third. Mm-hmm. Like, that is really uncool.
Yeah.
Yeah, racism, that sort of thing, doesn't really seem to be an issue, maybe... Kids are over that, and now they just make fun of you for birth order.
Yeah.
That's right, yeah.
They'll say that they'll always find something.
But the reason that Ender was born in the first place is his oldest brother, Peter, was the first one from his family who was monitored. And he was almost good enough to go to battle school. So then they had Valentine, because I thought maybe a girl would be a slightly softer version, and... She was a little too nice to go to battle school. So then they got one last chance to have Ender, and he was...
Just right.
Just right. This story is actually Goldilocks and the Three Bears.
In a very strange way. Ender's Game and the Goldilocks Principle.
So, Peter, the reason he didn't get to go to battle school is he has a little bit of a sociopathic streak in him.
A little bit.
Yeah,
you know.
Definitely some anger problems, it seems.
He's frequently threatening to kill people.
Including his younger siblings.
Including his siblings. He apparently has a tendency to find people's greatest fear and make sure they have to face it routinely.
Mm-hmm.
Which isn't very nice.
No.
I don't know if that's psychopathic. I don't know. It could be. It's manipulative. That's usually part of that. When he gets a little bit older and they move out of the city, he has a tendency to walk off into the woods and stake out small animals for experimentation.
That's what especially stood out to me as being sociopathic.
But at the same time, he's so frickin' smart that he seems to be really self-aware about his issues. Now, whether he actually feels badly about it or not is up for debate.
Yeah, he's several moments where when he's really, really mean and cutthroat, you don't know if he means it or if he's just kind of trying to manipulate the person. And then he has several moments where he's softer, but then you don't know if he's using that to manipulate or if he's actually feeling something.
And they even mention in there that staking out the squirrels, torturing the squirrels, might have been part of his overall plan, that his parents would find out about that, or Valentine would know about that.
Oh, uh-huh.
And that then he has this big thing he wants to do, which pretty much needs no parental supervision, spending all his time on the computer writing. And if he has this history of bad behavior, maybe being on the computer isn't quite so bad. He can spend all these hours if he's not torturing these squirrels and turning into a psychopath.
So, another... Like, if he's manipulating on that level, then he is truly a master.
Well, it's like, yeah, if you kill animals, then you're sociopathic. But if you're killing animals for the purpose of people thinking you're sociopathic, does that make you, like, a double sociopath? Or are you so fucked up that you're normal again? Like, how does that work?
He's like a metapath.
I don't know if that works that way. He is awfully self-aware, though.
Yeah, he is. And I mean, he is... I think the issue was not being good enough to go to battle school. I think it was more like they're afraid he'd get there and then cause some kind of bloody revolution among the student body.
He says that slightly violent streak in him.
And he ultimately somehow... basically figures out all the steps necessary to go from being a blogger to ruling the fucking world.
Yeah, becoming part of the hegemony that rules the entire world.
So that's impressive.
When he's 14. One of the things I thought at the end of the book was interesting about Peter is at the beginning, you know, he's bullying his siblings constantly and threatening to kill him and stuff. And then at the end when he takes over... he's trying to be a really good ruler who makes things peaceful on Earth and all that stuff, and he's not some kind of crazy tyrant who's killing all these people for no reason. So he's not, you know, entirely evil, which is what you kind of think about him at the beginning.
Yeah, I mean, his stated goal in leadership is to spread humanity among the stars so they can never be wiped out by getting attacked in one place.
I just think that's... like, you'd normally be like, oh, that little kid tortures his siblings and is power hungry. He's going to be a crazy tyrant. But he's actually, like, a really good political leader.
I guess his deal is just kind of control all the time. Mm-hmm. And when you're 6 years old, all you can do is have control over your younger brother and torment him. But once you're in charge of the whole planet, you have a little bit less to prove.
Yeah, but I mean, it really does set him up as being a much more complicated character than he could have been.
Yeah, he's not just evil older brother.
Right. I mean, he might be evil and manipulative, and he definitely is power-seeking. But what he does with it ultimately seems quite benign. Not actually, like, making him one of the greatest statesmen in the history of humanity. So, Valentine, on the flip side...
the older sister.
Yeah, is supposed to be the warm and fluffy, kind-hearted, wouldn't-hurt-a-fly type.
She's the only one Ender truly loves and the only one who truly loves Ender.
Yes. And I do think her capacity to love is significant.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think she's quite as pacifistic as we are maybe led to believe.
And she's definitely not, you know, when they say, oh, she was too soft for battle school, you would think she would be one of those, you know, well, really smart, obviously, because she was a candidate for battle school, but crying and doing all that, oh no, I'm overwhelmed. But she's actually really sharp, and she loves Ender, but she's not, like, really cuddly with him, and she's not really cuddly with other people. So she's not, you know, the wilting flower type by any means.
She certainly isn't cowed by Peter. And she starts to see through his stuff. She doesn't, you know, she only kind of works with him in a way that also benefits her.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I was going to point out her relationship with Peter, that she wasn't afraid or intimidated, that she was a little bit scared by Ender when she got to visit him when he was on leave between battle school and command school. But that was more because of what they had done to him than because he had learned this ability to destroy his enemies, as evidenced by crushing a wasp with one finger, which is kind of a badass move.
Yeah.
We were looking for symbolism. There's your symbol. Yeah,
I think you're right. The wasp.
I would not fucking do that. No.
I'd scream, pee myself, and roll off the raft.
Yeah, just about.
But, I don't know. She seemed like she could have been Ender's second in command for the invasion, if anything.
And I liked how when she and Peter were writing their, you know, blog posts, essentially from the opposite point of view and then helping shore up each other's stuff, it actually mentioned that she ended up being the better writer because she was better able to get inside the heads of the way that her character was supposed to be thinking.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can be an empathetic, kind person, but then still use it for means that aren't all soft and cuddly.
Well, having the manipulative ability and the empathy. All of the Wigan siblings have tons of empathy. They just use it very differently. You know, I guess now would be the time. Poor sweet Ender.
He's a little baby.
He's a nice kid. And just gets kicked around constantly. So
he's a nice kid who somehow ends up killing people and stuff.
Yeah, so
on accident, kind of.
I think, you know, maybe he's not quite as sweet as we think. Then, but that mindset of getting victory and, you know, winning and making sure you don't just win that fight, but winning the next fight too. Has, you know, that shows that he has a pretty hard streak in him somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Well, he has a lot of remorse for those things that turn out to be killings, fights, and the way that the other kids ended up. That really tears him up for the rest of the book when he's hurt somebody that he didn't want to kill anybody to start with, and they kind of forced him into it.
Yeah, he got in situations where he couldn't really help it. He had to at least hurt somebody, and he worries pretty much the entire book that he's turning into Peter. That's his biggest nightmare in the free play, when he keeps seeing Peter's face in the mirror instead of his own. So,
well, and he himself says that when he is fighting an enemy, he learns about them and empathizes with them. And in the moment when he fully understands and loves them, that's when he destroys them.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, we have his word for it more than anything else. I think with Bonesaw, we can see that a little bit, because he really was able to goad him into being in the position he was by understanding how he worked. And he wanted to make sure there was no second fight, that this wasn't a steady thing, but he certainly didn't have any intention of causing permanent damage to the guy.
Well, and he, I mean, probably saved himself from getting put in the hospital.
Oh, he definitely saved himself from getting put in the hospital by doing that.
Yeah.
And then the teachers always let this stuff happen because they don't want him to get the idea that when he's light years out in space that anyone will come to back him up.
Yep. So, Yeah, Ender's life kind of sucks a little bit.
Yeah, well, I mean, then the adults are manipulating him. I mean, really, this story, one of the, let's see, not to get too far afield, one of the reasons that a lot of people like the sequel to this book is that in that, Ender gets to have some agency, whereas in this book, he's just being manipulated by the adults constantly. And it's, when he changes, or when he, you know, makes a decision, it's not so much that he has this choice between doing two things, it's more a choice of how he is internally going to handle the bad situation he's in.
Yeah.
Where he's constantly being isolated and set against his peers, and then kind of being, like, almost forcing them apart, and then forcing him to figure out how to bring them back together, and then putting them in 50 impossible situations, and if he loses even one of them, then he's not good enough.
Yeah.
That sounds like the most pressure-filled part of it to me.
Yeah, which is how I know I'm not an Ender, because, like, two battles in, I'd be like, fuck it. Yeah. You guys are dicks. I give up.
It took him a really long time to finally break, hit that level of frustration.
Well, there's a reason I wouldn't have gone to battle school.
Well, it's like, nope, I'm hitting the self-destruct button and taking all of you with me.
Out the airlock.
That's right. That plan failed. Put him out the airlock. May surprising Ender didn't end up leading a bloody revolution. He probably could have overpowered the teachers with all the students in the battle school behind him.
Well, if they'd gotten a hold of real weapons, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah, if the teachers are coming to the battle room, just freeze them all in place.
Because it does kind of amuse me, the idea of, like, 8-year-old Ender running up to a teacher like, screw you! And then the teacher kind of just, like, puts his hand on his forehead. Ender's, like, right, swinging his fist.
Do the cartoonish, thing.
He's like, kid, you may be really smart and capable, but in, like, the real world, I could kick your ass.
That's true.
The child revolution ends when they all discover that light guns don't work out.
Oh, no!
I'm gonna freeze you, teacher! We're in the corridor. What's wrong with you?
Right. Like four Marines with wiffle bats put the revolution down. <That's right. laughs> Ow, it stings! Sit down! Oh, goodness.
Ender's Game parody. Make it happen.
Right. Any serious militaristic setting where people with wiffle bats can settle the war. It's my type of universe. Sounds like that would happen in Discworld, so.
Terry Pratchett?
Yes. There's some parody going on there, I guess.
All right.
Talk about some of these adults.
Yes.
Particularly Colonel Graf.
Who's Harrison Ford, apparently.
The principal slash head teacher slash Ender's personal military child psychologist guy.
Yeah?
I mean, really, go ahead.
No, his job from the beginning is pretty much just to be in charge of Ender, humanity's last great hope, and it seems to be about all he does is set up situations for Ender and guide his development into the perfect weapon.
Yeah, and maybe Graf has a hint of Ender in him, because he has to fully empathize and understand and love Ender to fuck him up completely with all these situations.
Yeah, and we see in a couple of the asides that he doesn't feel great about what he has to do to Ender, but by God, he's going to do it, because he has a job to do, and he's fucking awesome at it.
Yeah.
That's a really good point, though, because all these situations that are contrived that adults cannot help him out of have to be set up just right, so it's not outside his abilities, but still very challenging for him.
Mm-hmm.
That does take a lot of knowledge of Ender.
Well, yeah, I mean, if Bonzo and three meatheads had just beat him to death in the shower, then did a pretty shitty job getting the commander for the third invasion ready.
Lol, fail.
Has been done. Just so.
Lol, oops.
Yeah, lol, oops.
My bad. Colonel Graf texts a texts Major Anderson a picture of him shrugging. My bad.
Shrugging with Ender's bloody battered corpse on the floor behind him. Limbs at weird fucked up angles.
Oh, God. Oh. No. No, Ben.
Sorry. Got too carried far. Away. Got carried away.
Jeez.
That's what I do.
Okay. Well, then the other adult of significance is Mazer Rackham.
Yeah, he's a... Well, he's kind of a crazy person. He's like the crazy badass sensei.
Yeah. I just like his first introduction to Ender. He's just sitting on the floor, not moving or talking or doing anything. And for like hours... And then Ender finally tries to leave the room, and that's when he starts kicking his ass.
Ender, like, happens to walk within 3 feet of him and gets slapped.
He's like, ah, what the hell? All right, I guess I just won't get close. Well, that, all right, well, I'm just going to head over here, and I'm upside down.
And Mazer Rackham is a world hero for having defeated the buggers in the second invasion.
I guess he's a tactical genius himself, mostly in the sense of being able to kind of see the battlefield in a way that other people can't.
Yeah, he was the first one to crack the code, basically, of how the buggers operate.
Well, apparently there was kind of some big military force that the buggers came through and pretty much destroyed, and Mazer was running a small guard platoon or something, I don't know, of ships out by Saturn, and after they destroyed the main... space military, whatever, Mazer was their last hope and was able to destroy the whole fleet and save Earth.
Yeah. 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 Totally like Death Star style.
Yeah. So they kept him around.
Maneuver down a trench, fire one shot, and holy shit, the fleet stopped moving. Let's find out why. Yeah, just because he, fortunately for humanity, was not quite... educated enough to realize that his theory that the buggers were like bugs was completely stupid.
Yeah.
Because it was completely correct.
Maybe they have a queen who controls them. You're a dumb idiot.
So he pissed off the xenobiologists. Like, no, don't be ridiculous. Ants don't build starships. And he's like, look.
Come on.
Totally worked.
Do the buggers, are they just giant ants essentially?
I don't know. It sounds like they have a hive mind thing going on where the queen is their sole controlling force. I wonder if there's any knowledge inside the workers' heads that the queen doesn't have immediate access to, or they don't really get into that in this book.
I think they said in the book that it's kind of analogous to saying that human beings have rodents as a common ancestor or something.
That yeah.
They kind of have this ant form, but it's not really what they are anymore. And
okay.
Their physiology has changed and obviously gained this telepathy.
Yeah.
So it's kind of vague. Probably has something to do with their behavior and society, but they're not just giant ants.
Right. They're the aliens from Independence Day. Communicate through telepathy.
That's right. And Brent Spiner.
What do you want us to do?
Die! Pip, 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 dead.
Okay.
Okay. And then there's a whole list of friends and enemies.
Yeah, all the kids at the battle school, and all of them, well, not all of them, some of them get characterization, but none of them get so much that you can really talk about them exclusively.
Yeah, but they do tend to have certain qualities in common, so we listed a couple of them just to throw them out there, I guess. They all stand out as being not just smart, because all the kids there are smart, but being some of the smartest kids at the school, I think.
Or outstanding in a specific way.
Yeah.
Like, Petra is the best shooter at the school, for example.
Right. Or, you know, his squad leaders from his army all seem to... I'm sure they're all good tacticians, but they all seem to be just a little bit nuts at the same time.
Seems like all the adults are very careful not to let Ender have a best friend. You know, as soon as he has a friend, he's shuttled off to some other part of the battle school, but there are several people who are allowed to touch his life or... help him here or there along the way, so they all kind of get a little bit part of Ender's development.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think we'll expand on that just a little bit more when we get towards the end. We're talking about the writing, but all of these various friends or allies that the good kids...
There's only one guy named Eli.
Yeah! There is... Each of them does seem to have a specific lesson to impart to Ender before he's shuttled off to the next thing and not allowed to see them anymore.
Like, oh god, he's too close to him. Take him away.
Oh good, but this one taught him to do this. This one taught him to do this. To teach him not to trust adults. This kid had to teach him how to love. Actually, he already knew to do that.
Yeah, Valentine taught him that.
Yeah.
She taught that robot to love.
And then... And then the bad kids were... Actually, they're mostly bully archetypes, really. Bonzo had a more specific...
Well, he had that honor-driven Spanish machismo thing going on.
Yeah, like his specific version of jackassery.
Yeah.
So, anything else anyone wants to mention about any character whatsoever? No?
Nope.
Okay, then. Let's get into our moral issues.
All right.
Well, top of the list, bullying is bad, guys.
I don't know why I have to keep telling you these things week after week.
Unless you're Colonel Graf, then apparently it's okay.
Yeah.
If you have a purpose.
Maybe it's the form of bullying. Mental manipulation, okay. Yeah. Physical bullying, bad.
I wonder where cyberbullying comes in.
Oh, God. There is a small amount of cyberbullying.
I guess that's true.
At the beginning with Bernard and the...
That's right.
But I think that counts.
Cyberbullying almost sounds like one of those terms that would appear in a science fiction novel. Like a throwaway thing where 30 years later people read it and are like, that's stupid, and instead people actually say it on the news.
Oh yeah, it's a total thing that people talk about.
I think a lot of people are ashamed to say it, though. Like, oh yeah, we have to watch out for... cyberbullying.
It's like those kids are just straight up dick real bullies.
Yeah, can we just call it bullying? Cyberbullying sounds stupid. Let's go cyberbully that kid over there.
Let's make fun of him on the internet.
I'm gonna take his cyber lunch money. So I can go to the cyber cafe.
God. Are you gonna get there, the information super?
I am, as long as I don't get run over.
Oh, God. What just happened?
I think that was getting run over.
Well, back to bullying. Ender's bullied a fair amount throughout the book by different people.
Yes, and his... I guess his first friendly contact, possibly even friend, is a kid who is getting bullied as well.
Yes. Shen...
Because
his butt wiggled when he walked.
That's right. Which is totally a thing you'd get made fun of for. That one actually was realistic. That kid over there kind of shimmies his butt when he walks. That's... Okay, well, we need to point that out. You do that in college, I think. People are dicks.
So Ender kind of stands up for that kid by
Watch your butt. Bernard is looking.
Kind of his first step of taking control of any situation is defending Shen from the bully and kind of trying to defuse that bully situation, which was really tearing apart the launch group.
Yeah.
So Bernard was kind of terrorizing everybody, and people either were terrorized or joined his club.
His ring of terror.
Right.
Yeah. And once Ender broke that up and made friends with one of Bernard's friends, then the whole thing was just... all shot up. Bernard's circle of power was diffused.
Yeah, so I'm wondering if there's an overcoming bullies sort of message, or if there's a... I don't know, I'm probably reading too deeply into this because bullying is a little bit of a button for me, but two of the bullies were stopped by getting killed, which is kind of extreme.
Well, I was just wondering, a lot of the bullying happens and the adults notice but let it happen for whatever reason. And so then Ender has to go to those extremes to stop it. So maybe there's something, commentary on, like, adults' role in bullying in children.
Yeah, and I do kind of wonder what it is about Ender that leads bullies to get to the point with him where they want to hurt him a lot.
Yeah. Because they helly jelly.
That's right. The bullies helly jelly, yo!
They're haters.
Haters gonna hate.
Ender's like, haters to the left. That's where the morgue is.
Domination. Okay, so moving along, the adults allowing that to happen, like this whole manipulation of children occurring throughout the novel.
Yeah. And it's happening, you know, to save the human race.
Right.
So.
Yeah, well, then that's. Okay? That's Graf's defense when he's on trial after the war,
mm-hmm.
when they're bringing out, you know, the prosecution brings out these images of the kids that, the two kids that Ender killed, and then Graf shows them the complete record and says, it was in self-defense, this is what I had to do to make him into who he is, and by the way, we're all still alive, so no bitching. And it worked.
Yep.
There is kind of the point in there that you can't really look back 30 years later and say what should or shouldn't have been done, or even people who weren't in that situation, you know, that he did what he did and it worked, and it's yeah. hard to go back and say whether that was the right thing to do.
Yeah, he if said, what you would have done would have worked better, or if you would have done anything mm-hmm. differently, even.
Right. Mm-hmm. When he said, wait 30 years for the historians to get done with you, and then you'll really know.
Yeah.
And so it maybe, I guess it raises the issue of whether the ends justify the means.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, in this universe, it seems like the moral consensus is yes.
Among the humans, yeah.
Yeah. Well, no, probably not among the buggers.
Although they do forgive Ender.
That's true.
For what he did.
That's true.
So...
He didn't know what he was doing, and they kind of see it as their fault for terrifying humanity to that degree in the first place.
Yeah, so maybe the bugs are the most empathetic of all.
Maybe they are. That's quite a lot of capacity for forgiveness.
Because I feel like if the human race found out you were going to destroy all of us, we'd go out with our middle fingers in the air. Fuck you forever!
I'm pretty sure if I was like the captain of a colony ship with enough people on it to... repopulate the human race, and we're the only survivors of some gigantic war, and the leader of the enemy forces in that war came and found me, I would not be inclined to forgive him.
He's like, I feel really bad, guys. Yeah, you're going out the airlock.
Yeah, here's the thing. Family's gone. Planet's gone. I'm kind of pissed.
I feel like they're pretty clear, though, that the buggers didn't just let humans come in. They had to fight for every inch of that territory, and
that's
kind
true.
Of more that they showed up with gravity death gun that they didn't have any defense against.
That's true.
Yeah.
They were fighting to stay alive, but they forgave Ender when, you know, after it was all said and done, they understood what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, it might be done.
Or they weren't just like, oh, sorry, whoops, you can kill us now.
Yeah, right. Right.
And it might be different, too, if that military commander was a... kid and you had actually seen a lot of his thoughts, which it appears that they did.
Yeah.
And know that he didn't know he was killing you.
Just kind of like how they didn't know they were killing people in the second
That's true.
In
they the didn't necessarily forgive humanity, but they did forgive Ender.
Yeah.
Right. And so. they were more sad about humanity. The humans didn't forgive us.
Yeah.
Sorry, guys, we were scared.
Well, understandably.
Yeah. I guess is one more thing along the lines of manipulation before we get to that last one. But the authoritarianism in the name of security, this government that has broad censorship powers and can pretty strictly control aspects of your private life, like whether or not you get pregnant.
Yeah, or even what gender of child you have.
Yeah,
apparently. Yeah.
Because when Ender was talking to Colonel Graf, they're like, well, we had your parents have a girl the second time. We thought she might be a little softer. It's like, what?
Who? And again, as part of this, do the ends justify the means equation? And I don't know. I can't help but wonder how much all that stuff really helps.
Of the authoritarianism?
Yeah, I mean, maybe the population control was necessary because they were putting so many resources into building ships they couldn't put them into growing food or something. But I do wonder if the censorship does any good.
Yeah, well, I mean, here on Novel Ideas, we are anti-censorship. And yeah, I tend to think, you know, if you're trying to suppress people saying subversive things on the internet, like, anyone who's been on the internet knows it's just full of crazy people spouting vitriol all the time. So it's not really anything out of the ordinary.
I guess I didn't get a big censorship vibe from this. Is it just that they control access and you can't say what you want unless you're specifically asked onto these networks?
Well, they keep bringing it up. Like, the propaganda videos are all censored, and they mention it when Ender is going to the shuttle. He wonders what would happen if he'd run to the cameras and said something he didn't know would be censored out.
Hide in Valentine. Yeah,
and, like, the letters being blocked from reaching him. And, I mean, I'm sure, I don't know if that happens for every kid in battle school. I actually kind of think it does. But definitely with him, he was a special case, so maybe it was just him. But
I really got the impression they were censoring everybody's letters.
That was more my impression, too. But says,
no letters at all.
I'm just wondering what the big damn secret is.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, well, you know that, like, why does it need to be secret that Maser Rackham figured out there was a queen and took out the flagship?
Yeah, I was thinking that, too. And the only thing I could think of is maybe if people discovered that he, you know, had this non-miraculous victory, it was more just strategic, then they would go, oh, the buggers aren't as scary as we thought, and then start the infighting. Whereas if you keep it a secret and make it look like a miracle, then the fear hangs over your head more.
Yeah, or it could just be institutional inertia and paranoia, where, like, don't ever tell anyone everything. which honestly, to me, in a real world setting, would be the most likely scenario, I think.
It kind of freaked them out that they didn't know what happened with the buggers, that we blew up this one ship and we seem to have won. What happened?
Yeah, the buggers are all alive, but not moving at all.
Yeah.
That's weird.
Yeah, that'd be a very strange moment to be a part of.
Yeah.
For sure. It's like, all right, and take evasive maneuvers, and nothing's happening. They're crashing into it. What the fuck is going on? All right, everybody back off. We're just going to watch.
And chill out for a few hours here and see what happens. There's where you need your yakety sack.
Yeah, exactly. Explosion. Ding, 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 ding. Like, ships just flying sideways out from the formation.
It's careening into Jupiter. What the hell is this? Oh, okay. Anything else about that, I guess?
No, I was going to let you...
Let me bring up my feminism?
Let you get in there.
So there really isn't an egregious amount of sexist stuff in this book, I would say. But I always find it, because I'm good at that. And the two moments that stood out the most to me, the first one was when Ender asked if there were girls at battle school. And Colonel Graf said, yes, some, but not very many, because they have thousands of years of evolution working against them. And I was like, what the fuck is that about? What's that even mean? No, we don't. women have not evolved to somehow be softer and less militarily minded. And it was I think it was honestly the wording, because if he had said society and culture has taught women to not want to go to battle school or something, I would have agreed with him more, because, you know, men are supposed to be more militaristic and all that. But just on, like, a purely scientific level, I know that these scientists ran a study with girls, I don't remember the exact setup, but they were just going to see if they were as violent as guys, basically, since the overall impression is guys are more violent.
Right.
And so they set up this scenario that would force girls to either be violent or not. And they found out that girls are, like, way more cutthroat and violent in some situations than even guys are. They just need to kind of strip away that social conditioning, and then they're, like, totally hardcore. So I thought that was BS, and that half of the people at the battle school should be girls.
Seems like the 6 year old seems like a 6 year old girl. There'd still be plenty of time to work on the social conditioning.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Shape that the way you want it. Yeah,
because if it's mainly social conditioning, then which I think it is, then it doesn't seem like a deal. I thought the evolution thing was like a stupid cop out.
Well, yeah, scientifically incorrect.
Yeah.
And if you really want to write a book where it's mostly about boys, there are better ways to get girls out of there. Seems like I read some sci-fi thing where the women weren't combatants, but they were all the pilots because they had better...
Starship Troopers, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought Dune, and then no, those are all aliens who are the pilots for a different reason, but it seemed like there are things you can do to create your mostly male environment, but...
Yeah.
Not be quite so sexist if that's what you need to do.
Yeah, but you could even make it as simple as, oh, there's a girls' school and a boys' school.
There you go. Because
while they're here, they hit the age where hormones start kicking in, and we just don't want to deal with that at battle school.
Yeah. And then also at battle school, pretty much the only girl Ender meets or is of any significance is Petra. And she's pretty cool in the fact that she's a sharpshooter, you know, ends up commanding her own army and being one of his... commander people at the simulation at the end. But then I thought it was kind of a cop-out that she was the first one to crack under the pressure and was just totally ruined. She was never the same after that. And I was like, oh, great. He has one girl, and she's the one who cracks under the pressure. I mean, a couple people did crack after her.
Right.
She was the first one to go, and I thought
that And none of the others did by name, for that matter.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that was an easily correctable one, too, because we already know that Dink doesn't respond very well to pressure. He's a little bit nervous about it. Like, why couldn't he be the one who craft?
Yeah.
Or, I don't know.
Or just Shen.
Anybody
or
else. Yeah, you'd like 25 people who are not Petra.
Crazy Tom.
25 boys to choose from who are not Petra.
In the middle of a battle, Shen's butt just starts twitching. Lops over the controls.
Shen, what's going on? Your formation's butt is wiggling. You just hear him go, no! Just being dragged out of the simulator, foaming at the mouth.
Well, I guess I wanted to talk a little bit about Valentine's letter, which Ender immediately realizes has been censored, and also she has written at the request of the military and feels betrayed by her. And then her meeting with him later when he's on leave before going to command school. And both of those moments were interesting to me because he saw through the letter and definitely knew it was from Valentine, felt betrayed by her, but then went and did what he was supposed, like, was the intention of her writing the letter in the first place. Like, he went and did what they wanted him to, even though he saw through the letter. And then when she went and visited him, when he was on leave, like, a lot of that conversation seemed to be him completely shooting down everything she said. And then at the end of the conversation, he's like, okay, I'm ready to go to command school. And I was like, huh. Because he's smart enough to see through all of it, but then somehow it works anyway.
I think a lot of this ties into the whole humanity plight thing, that all the reasons that he says to not do, you know, he knows they're manipulating him and he doesn't want to do any of that stuff, but just the interaction with Valentine reminds him what's important to him in humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think he's going back to school to save Valentine, which is the human connection that's important to him. So it's none of the substance of the letter, just the reminder, you
that
know,
this, Valentine's there.
Right, this is what's important to you, and there's millions of people who have other things important to them, and this is what we're fighting for.
It's that power of love, man.
Yeah.
That's right.
It's going to save us all, except the buggers. Also them, too.
And the buggers.
And the buggers.
Also the buggers. All right. Well, on that note, the...
themes of the book.
Primary themes of the book seem to be related to love.
That's one of the other reasons it kind of feels like a YA book, is the theme is love. That's true of most YA books.
Yeah, I mean, Ender, I mean, Valentine and Ender and their love for each other is the reason humanity isn't dead, I guess.
Well,
to some degree.
They would have been okay because the birds weren't planning on invading again.
As it turns out, yes. Or Ender and the friends that he made, and even if they weren't really allowed to be a consistent part of his life, they at least give him enough faith in humanity to want to continue and to have a team he can work with.
Mm-hmm.
And the importance of that. And then one of the things we haven't really touched on is that there's a reasonably diverse background among the characters in the battle school.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, just being accepting and being able to make friendships with a lot of different types of people.
Well, like, Eli is Muslim.
Yeah.
And from one of, like, probably a Middle Eastern country. I don't think they specify where exactly.
Right.
And it seems like that's kind of true of a lot of the kids at the battle school. That they're just a mix of a bunch of different nationalities. And that's never really pointed out.
Yes, I mean, these kids, it's not the, it's not necessarily, oh, Euro names, we assume they're a bunch of white kids thing. That usually goes on, like, these kids could be from anywhere.
Like Shen.
I say,
yeah.
Shen doesn't sound like he's from Kansas.
Bonso is Spanish.
Mm-hmm. Hansu, Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And Bernard, I think, was French.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although I guarantee in the movie they're all white.
Probably true.
Hollywood.
Like Han Su, how can we make him white? Oh, we'll just call him Hot Soup. We don't know what to refer to.
Him kind of
Hollywood!
Damn it, Hollywood.
And Petro will be a white boy somehow.
A blonde white boy.
Just change it to Petro.
Damn it! Stop doing that.
What is wrong with you?
And, you know, going back to the beginning, like, so this controversy around Orson Scott Card, I think part of the reason it feels so strange that that controversy exists to some of us who've been a fan of this book for a lot of years is that, what the hell, dude? This book's about love and acceptance. Like, it's weird to hear you say anything else.
Yeah, because if you just read the book and knew nothing about the author, you would not walk away from this book going, oh, Orson Scott Card hates gay people.
Right.
That's like nowhere at all in the book.
Well, he has characters in other books who are gay, and I think there's even one where a pair of gay characters have a relationship and it's not presented as
weird or bad.
And monstrous and sinful or anything. Yeah. So, who the hell knows? Anyway,
what's your deal, guy?
And then we've talked a whole bunch about do the ends justify the means, which is, you know, like the sub-theme of this novel, maybe.
Yeah.
Here's all this stuff, and you're supposed to look at it and know how terrible it is, but then it works.
Yep. So how terrible is it?
Which is supposed to make you not feel good, I guess? I don't know.
Uncomfortable, maybe.
I'm not sure. Like, at the end of the book, I think you're supposed to feel kind of bad, but kind of vaguely hopeful. But not,
yeah.
But not too hopeful.
A little hopeful.
That's my impression of it, at least.
Hey, Ender can potentially help restore the buggers, so, I mean, there's something going on there.
As the internet would say, not sure if warrant.
I think that's kind of a real strength of the writing, is that there aren't that many absolutes. I mean, obviously bullying is bad, but,
right.
I mean, there's kind of ambiguity about whether the whole thing was, I mean, all of humanity seems pretty happy they've defeated the buggers, but it turns out that was unnecessary to start with, and
mm-hmm.
There just aren't a whole lot of everything was great, or everything, you know, this part was, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm bad at saying things.
No. Well, in his own introduction to the edition of the novel that I read, and that it looks like you also had,
mm-hmm.
He says that, you know, he has his master's degree in playwriting and fine arts or something.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah, he's a theater guy originally.
Yeah, and that some of the critics who haven't liked the book as much have had issues with the relative plainness of the writing style, but then he says, yeah, but also if you want to go look for those layers and stuff, they're in there. It's just, you know, I wanted to write something that people could actually read.
Yeah.
And I do think that he did a really good job of that, because the writing is fairly I don't know if simple is quite the right word, but it's very straightforward. He's telling you what's going on. Everything in there, and this is a point that Kevin brought up when we were outlining too, but everything in there seems to serve some purpose. And then combining that with having all these layers going on with different characters in different situations is... it's really interesting because you feel like you're reading really fast and you get the end and realize that there is so much to talk about.
On what Ben was saying, the I feel like every sentence in this book is kind of doing characterization and plot advancement at the same time. Everything you learn isn't through description, it's through Ender's eyes. So as he goes to the battle school, you learn about the battle school and how it works through him just kind of walking through a corridor and discovering that gravity's because the whole thing is curved and spins. And he learns about the way the armies work just by seeing armies, or insights that he has about the way the kids behave. And there's very little where it wanders off into description or...
Yeah, so you don't need, like, college biology major's paper on how Mendelian genetics work as an aside.
Exactly. Just for instance. Not that we know anyone who writes that way.
That's right, Bob Einlund. Or you don't have to have a Mr. Exposition character who pops in and is like, oh, well, you see, this works this way because of this and this and this. Okay, now I'm going to go away and you're not going to see me for a long time for no reason.
Right.
Yeah.
So as you discover the battle school, you also learn things about Ender's character because you see it through his eyes.
Yeah, and I even... Some of the descriptions of the universe they're in, even... when I was reading about some of the games he was playing, I mean, the free play is the big one, which we haven't really touched on yet, so we should probably do that in a second. But one of the, like, launchy games he was playing, you controlled a little animated bear. And
yeah.
Talked about it, you know, dying a cute death. And I was like, that actually kind of tells you a lot about the world they're in, and for that matter is a pretty good description of certain types of video games. Like, we all know what that means without needing a 3-page description of the gameplay, I think. You know, okay, so, you know, the characters in video games are always having bad things happen to them, and in some games it's grisly, and in some games it is...
It's cute!
Kind of cutesy, yeah. Let's hit some of these points of interest we had listed before we forget about them, perhaps.
Okay, do you not want to talk about free play?
Oh, I do. I guess that was listed right before that. I was thinking...
As a symbol.
Fine.
So we don't really talk about symbols that much, and the free play in this game is essentially designed to be a symbol of what's in your mind.
Yeah, that seems to be how it works out, or at least for Ender, because it sounds like it's kind of the same for everybody.
Up until the Giant's Drink.
Yeah, up until Fairyland.
And the end of the world.
Seems like a tool for the teachers to kind of get an insight into how the kids' minds work. So they give them this very open-ended game with lots of different paths you can take. And if you like to go to the swings, you go to the swings. You can solve a puzzle game, play an action game. Or you can do something that is basically beating your head against the wall and losing every time you try. And
until you burrow through a giant's eye and kill it.
That's right.
Oh, the giant is totally the Kobayashi Maru scenario.
Where anything you pick, you lose.
Only one person has ever beaten it.
Ender Wiggin?
Ender Wiggin.
Ender T. Wiggin.
Yeah. Ender Tiberius Wiggin.
So even as a symbol that's inside into Ender's mind, it's not blatantly a writing tool. It fits in the plot very well as one of the teachers
have manipulation are monitoring tools. Him to see what's going on with him.
Right.
Why does he keep going back to that?
Yeah. He's not going to, like, go nuts and kill himself like that one kid. Like, stop bringing up that kid. I always thought those free play sections were really interesting, even when I was reading the book for the first time. When I was 14, and usually in a side like that, I would be like, who cares? Get me to the battle room again.
Yeah.
But, I think it does. It does really, it lets teachers see what's in his head, but also lets the reader see what's in his head. and, like, see what he's fearing. Like, he goes to the playground and the children all turn into wolves. Well, how have children largely treated Ender in his life?
Yeah. And then he has to kill them all to get rid of them.
Right.
Which, because when he just knocks them out, they wake up again, so...
So again, this total victory has mm-hmm. to be achieved, and when he finally achieves most of those goals, he gets to the room in the tower, and he sees Peter in the mirror, and is afraid he's turning into him, and...
Yeah. It's all a giant symbol.
A giant symbol.
Oh! Wordplay.
All right. Now you can talk about points of interest.
No, I don't want to. Because nothing will be as interesting as that.
Well, I'll talk about points of interest.
All right.
One thing that we didn't put on the list that I thought of as we were talking, when I saw the name, like, Rose the Nose or something, was just that little aside about how Jewish commanders, for some reason, are supposed to be, like... more amazing than everyone else. And Rose was Jewish, so he thought he was, like, fantastic, but then he wasn't that great.
Right.
But I was just like, what? Where did that come from? Like,
and then went nowhere with it?
Yeah!
That was really weird.
And, like, Mazer was, like, weird for not being Jewish.
Yeah.
In that invasion scheme.
This half-Maori crazy person with a checkered past and a couple of demotions on his record is the guy who finally figures everything out.
Yeah,
that probably that could have been expanded upon or cut.
Admitted.
Maybe that's the one little tidbit that needed to be edited out. It's like, the military thinks it's good luck if they have a Jewish commander somewhere. And what? Oh, I was done. Okay. Guess I'll just try to forget that I read that. I wanted to point out that Orson Scott Card's prediction on how the internet would work was not too far off the mark.
Yeah.
You go to these smaller message boards and... deal with
fighting the comments, basically.
Yeah, fighting the comments. Like, you'd get a ton of vitriol from a bunch of people, and sounds like they were kind of trolling in the early stages to figure out what people would react to. And the internet in this story feels like it might be a slightly more mature internet than we have. Like, are there areas of it that actually have quite a bit of respectability? Like, their international debates where you have to be invited to them, and people just sit on the sidelines and watch. And presumably there's a comments feed for that that is just full of garbage.
Yeah. I think they even said that Valentine and Peter practice writing things in the comments so that they see what people made fun of.
Right.
And, their it's throwaway so childish.
Garbage was there, yeah.
Oh, it turns out I'm going to write "Ur a fag" that people think that's childish.
Don't go to the YouTube comments. What
are
they fucking
do? My God. I like reading the first three or four of them. I don't want to click over the page. But
yeah.
Sometimes there's something pretty funny in there.
Sometimes the top ones are kind of funny.
Well, sometimes they're funny unintentionally, but...
The worst is if you go to a website and read anything that has a strong opinion on, like, feminism or racism or anything. It's just like... Do not even begin to read those comments, or your brain will boil out of your skull.
Or the Yahoo comments are like the dumpster of humanity.
So that's where Peter and Valentine started.
That's right. Start in the Yahoo comments.
Worked their way up to Reddit, and then they got invited to write for the Washington Post.
That's right. Where they turn the comments off.
I think on that technology point, the whole book is written in a way that doesn't seem like it's the future from 30 years ago. All the things that they bring up, there's no technology that just seems like it's horribly out of date science fiction that's supposed to look really futuristic.
Yeah.
Yeah, if there's that is kind of a trope. It's not one that people are necessarily aware of in the moment when they're writing it, but It's something you see a lot, and I think that that trope should be named A Visit to Epcot Center.
Oh, Epcot.
Which, when I visited it, was absurd.
And that was how many years ago?
It was like 20 years.
We visited that?
Like 20 years ago, it was 40 years out of date.
The home of the future! Oh, God.
Oh, Lord. But, yeah, he does avoid that, you know. Ender uses a desk, and even though the desk is also a computer, it's not like his cyber desk.
Yeah. It's essentially a tablet.
Yeah, it is.
Like a, yeah, that you could buy at the store today.
Yeah, it feels, more than ever, it feels like something in the near future. And it was written in 1986, mm-hmm. So... I don't know, maybe the buggers really are going to invade. We should be worried. It's like, I saw all of this in a dream, and that dream was actually transmitted to him by a bugger queen or something.
Oh, God!
That's why he's going crazy. He's had aliens in his mind for 30 years.
I've been saying it! Ain't I been saying it?
Exactly. I'm fly. I'm an author. No, you can't! Sit down. I think we've touched on a bunch of our writing points here. I think the one we haven't really mentioned is that one thing that helps this book stand out from some of the other science fiction we've done on the podcast, and pretty much all classic science fiction, to be honest, is that it is more character and emotion-based rather than, here's a cool concept, now we're just going to poke around that universe and not have any three-dimensional characters inside of it.
It's different from the Clark or the Asimov.
Yeah, or even the Heinlein, where his main, his best character in every book tends to be just a little too competent to be a real human being.
Yeah, those are more just like, look at this cool idea I came up with, mm-hmm. and here are people bouncing around, and this is more of the new generation of sci-fi, which is more like, here are some interesting characters going through difficult things in a futuristic setting.
Right.
I think it really speaks to the strength of this, that one of the main features of it is the battle room, kids flying around and shooting each other with lasers, and we pretty much haven't even mentioned that yet.
That's true. Yeah.
That's one of the most interesting and amazing parts, especially reading it as a young reader.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I don't think we've even said how many characters and issues.
For that matter, I think that concept is where the book came from. That's what the short story he wrote that eventually got turned into this novel, I think, was called The Battle Room.
Oh, it was Kids in the Battle Room.
Yeah. And he writes a whole book around that idea. And, yeah, you're exactly right. That's not even, as an adult, it's almost not even a very memorable part of the book in some ways.
It's still pretty awesome.
It's pretty awesome.
No, don't get me wrong. It's still very cool. But like, when you're discussing the book, you're more inclined to say, so, you know, who do I know who's more of a Peter and more of a Valentine and more of an Ender versus, oh, it was so cool, they bounced off a thing and then they shot a guy with a laser gun and then they're all like, pew, 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 and...
I'm impressed. I was wondering if Orson Scott Card was, like, drawing diagrams because he was writing zero gravity battles of kids like going to opposite corners and coming around, and sometimes when I was reading that I was like, how did he keep track of all this? Shall I see like have like his own little battle room set up with like kids hanging from wires and like, okay, if Ender goes there.
He just drew a cube and did like a Family Circus style dotted line.
That's right.
I just, like, some of that zero gravity description, I'd have to, like, actually slowly go through and try to, like, puzzle out. Because otherwise, you're just like, I have no clue what that kid's doing.
I wonder that sometimes when I'm reading science, especially science fiction, military science fiction, because there are a lot of space battles, and like, go to heading 220 at this acceleration, and we'll get to this point in X number of minutes. I'm like, did they actually calculate that?
Or were they just like, yeah, sounds good.
It was like, nah, 7 sounds cooler than 16 in this spot, so make it 7.
That would be surprising.
Probably depends on the author. Some of them are probably super anal retentive.
And they're like, okay, 220 is this way, and at this acceleration, they'll go this, and they'll go this far, and okay, so I have to adjust this, and it's like, dude, just write your book.
Just be like, the ship ended up at that spot where the yeah. cool thing happened.
Cut out the heading 220, you solve your whole problem. That's yeah.
Then they left for the planet.
Exactly. They turned hard to starboard.
Which way is starboard? Actually, in this orientation,
it would have been slightly to port.
On the Z axis, they went up to a 15 degree inclination.
Oh, God.
So, some questions we have for this book.
I want to know if Ender finds a home for the buggers.
There are sequels. You might read them.
I haven't read them. I've read Ender's Shadow, actually, but that's it.
What did Peter do to unify Earth? And where are the bodies buried?
Yeah, at the end, after a bunch of time dilation of Ender traveling light years away, you learn over faster-than-light communication that Peter is suddenly, or not suddenly, but has now unified Earth and is 70 years old, and there's peace and no more war. So, how did that happen?
What the hell did that guy do?
Let's see. Well, what happened in the first invasion? We have a pretty good picture of the second one, I think.
Yeah.
I'm sure the movie will have a version of it, based on the trailers. but I would actually, if there was a Tolkien-style compendium of Ender's universe, I might read that history.
Yeah, like I said, I would like to read Valentine's History of the Bugger Wars.
Yeah, I'm sure that would be interesting. let's see.
Oh, and then...
Oh, yeah.
Well, I guess Ben or Kevin asked, what about the previous kids who were potential Enders?
Oh, and yeah. There's a lot of ominous reference to the kids who didn't make it. Remember what happened to those kids before? We don't want Ender to turn out like them. And we don't ever find out whether they died or just got sent back to Earth or are all now in padded rooms somewhere.
Yeah, are they still in command school? Did they end up becoming commanders elsewhere?
They told Ender that they weren't, like, killed off, which could have been a lie.
Yeah.
Padded room seems most likely to me, based on what I've seen.
Ender practically goes crazy,
exactly. Yeah. And, yeah, there have been, you know, Ender, there have been students before you, and they have failed. Oh, well, what happens if I fail? Well, then there's not going to be a commander.
Yeah.
So, no pressure, kid. Slap him on the butt. Good game.
But my question, coming off of that, was... is Ender's age a strategic move? Because they tell him at the end, you know, well, you had to be empathetic so you could understand the way the buggers fought. And you couldn't know it was real because then you might have not destroyed the planet. And you had to be a kid because kids think in this way. And so that made me go, okay, so is it an advantage that Ender's 11 years old when he does this, you know, with some of the problems with the earlier ones that... that our fleet hadn't reached the buggers yet, and they aged out, essentially.
Right.
They hit 30, and, like, they just couldn't do it anymore. and the fact that all of Ender's squadron leaders are all kids, too, like, is, you know, if this book, if the bugger invasion, or the fleet was going to reach the buggers 20 years later, would Ender and his friends all still be capable enough to do it, or would they have to go find another kid?
Yeah, I mean, they must have had a plan for that. They must have known the timing of the starships arriving in system. It sounds like they had a little bit of control over their arrival time, but, you know, probably a matter of weeks, not years so much. So if they'd found the commander 50 years ago, would they have stuck him on a ship at high relativistic speeds like they did with Mazer? Seems like it'd be a better solution than, oh, out of time, find the next one.
We're sorry, but our commander is in another battle school.
That's right. So, our verdict. I have said more than once, I think even on this podcast, that this is probably my favorite book of all time, so I like it a little bit.
So Ben said, I'm good.
Yeah, I just OMFG was all I wrote in the outline.
I do think it's a very good book, and I do remember peeing myself a little bit over it when I was younger. As an adult, I was not completely enraptured in love with it, but it's really good. I just kind of had a couple things that stuck out and made me go, oh, I didn't really notice that before. I don't like that as much as I thought I did. But overall, it's still a cool book, so I still really like it.
It's been my favorite book, I think, since I read it the first time, so probably over half my life now,
yeah.
Which I think is a pretty good testament for it. I think there are other books that are arguably better from different perspectives, literary perspectives, but I think just from a core feel of being your favorite book, that nothing has ever displaced it in that. I think it's a pretty worthwhile read for a lot of people, if you've ever been a kid.
Especially a gifted kid.
Yeah, something to empathize with there.
Gifted kids do tend to connect with this book to a large degree. I think there are some adults, and actually I referred to that gifted counselor in the introduction where he said her letter was more or less, kids don't think and act this way, but the mail he got from gifted kids was always, this is exactly how we think and act, and adults don't believe that it's possible. So I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah.
That's a lot how I feel. I had those moments at a pretty young age, being like 10 years old, having an adult talking to me or a group of kids and realizing I know more than this person does. And if you ever felt that way at a young age, I think this book might make a lot of sense to you.
Oh, I get it now.
Oh. So, what you reading right now?
I'm about to finish Allegiant by Veronica Roth, which is the third book in the trilogy, the Divergent trilogy. Ben and I, if you might recall, read Divergent about over a year ago now.
Longtime fans might recall.
They are actually making a movie of Divergent.
Not surprising.
It's coming out fairly soon, so.
Given the sales figures.
But the third book just came out a couple weeks ago, so.
Also, unlike Ender's Game, Divergent seems fairly filmable.
Yes. Although, I don't know what the hell they're going to do when the story just goes insane.
Completely change the plot. That's what they like.
Yeah.
But hell,
maybe something sellable.
Maybe it'll make it better.
Maybe they'll keep it. That's kind of what movies do.
Maybe so.
Here's a plate of utter nonsense. Enjoy your plot. What?
I'm reading A Storm of Swords by Gurm.
Gurm!
I need a bit of a break between those. Now made it to the third one.
It's pretty good. If that one slows you down, then never read the Wheel of Time series.
Oh, also, if you finish A Storm of Swords and think, ooh, that was really long and maybe not worth it, don't read the other two.
That is what I've heard and already resolved not to.
Because
I think I'm going to be getting my Gurm from HBO.
Yeah. Now. You'll recall, it took me about 3 months to read A Dance of Dragons.
Yeah, well.
Oh, shit.
I can understand that.
I feel like there'd be a market for coming through and abridging some of this. Like the 400 to 500 page Gurm abridgment.
We cut 50% really of awesome. The material out.
Yes. How about
any fantasy series? The Wheel of Time could be a fucking trilogy. It's like 14 books. It's like 14 800 page books of that. Anywho, I finished a lot of books when I was out of town. I don't really need to name them, I think. Just assume I've been reading more Honor Harrington stuff. You'll be correct. You'll be correct. I'm currently reading Joy Luck Club by Amy Tan, which just happens to be what we are doing next time.
Yep.
So, I guess that's not so coincidental.
He just happened to pick it up.
So, anyway, if you have any thoughts on what you've heard today, suggestions, questions, internet vitriol, whatever, You can leave a comment on our website, novelideaspodcast.com.
You can email us, novelideaspodcast@gmail.com.
We're on Twitter, @novelideaspod.
And we're also on iTunes.
And if you see us there, rate, review, etc., whatever you do on iTunes. I don't actually know.
And Kevin, do you have any particular thing you would like to plug for yourself?
No, I do not.
Okay.
All right.
I said I'd give you the opportunity.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, filed any patents lately? thank you for listening. As I said, not next week, actually on Thursday, if all goes well.
Theoretically.
We'll be doing The Joy Luck Club by Amy Tan. So that should do it, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.